from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now, here's your host for Chatterbox.
Good morning, everybody. This is Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name's Alon.
And my name's Ara.
We have a guest in the studio today, a friend of mine, and he doesn't want to talk, so he might not talk all that much. However, I am going to make him at least say hello. So, Noah, say hello.
Hello.
There you go. He said he wouldn't talk for the first 10 minutes, and I already broke that promise. So, hopefully he'll chat a bit later. I guess one good thing about him is that he's not your traditional guy, and he doesn't have, like he didn't have a TV in his house except for the purpose of watching DVDs, like no cable, no television.
I don't have a TV in my house except for the purpose of playing games.
Really? You don't even have cable TV? Isn't cable TV forced upon you?
Well, yes, it is forced upon me. And now that I've bought a new TV since the last one I bought 10 years ago,
yeah,
I will reluctantly watch the TV.
Okay.
But it's just there, you know, it's... Like, if they didn't supply that stuff to me, and if I had to get some kind of ridiculous satellite thing to access television...
Damn, the HOAs, man.
Or even the crazy, like, regular TV converter box thing that people have to do these days. Like, no, there would be no TV.
Yeah. That's only for ancient TVs and over-the-air, man. You don't have to do that.
Right.
Okay. Well, anyway, what you do have, though, is a Wii. And you play the Wii, so we might talk about that. It actually comes into play with something I'm going to talk about a little later. We've been having these shows that are very topical lately, where we cover pretty much just one thing and go on. And what I'm worried about is that we might go back to that very same topic again today.
We won't, trust me.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, what we do want to talk about, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but we're going to be discussing Heavy Rain at least a little bit.
I'm hoping that we're going to be discussing it a little bit.
So the reason I suspect it'll go back to our past discussions of narrative and games and gameplay or basically narrative versus gameplay is that Heavy Rain is a prime example of what we've been discussing the last couple of weeks.
It is, and I can rest assured that we're not going to tread over water we've already have, because the topic of narrative and gameplay is gigantic.
Okay.
And it's very broad. And in fact, it's so broad, right, that that's one of the reasons why it's so polarizing. Because you say those two terms together, and then you say a few things, and typically people will project those things into all kinds of different categories that are related, but actually very, very different from one another. And so a lot of – it's sometimes hard to have discussions about gameplay and narrative because there's so many subtleties about them that you have to be kind of precise, and a lot of people just, I don't know, for better or worse, aren't capable of discussion with that much precision.
Okay, well, if we're going to talk about Heavy Rain, we should start by at least telling the audience what it is, given that not everyone actually knows what it is.
We should.
Especially because it's console specific. So luckily, Noah, one of the developers of Heavy Rain, tell us a little bit about this game.
One of the developers.
What do you know about this Heavy Rain game?
Yeah, it's not light.
Not right.
I've got nothing.
Okay, good. So Heavy Rain is it's a game developed solely for the PS3. I guess it started as just a tech demo.
Did you
ever see the demo?
No.
You didn't go to E3 that year. So,
no, and if I did, I would have skillfully avoided such things.
That game, dude, the demo was so rough because, I mean, behind closed doors, people could see it, right, as much as they wanted. But where it was more publicly available to view,
right,
at E3, it was so loud, and of course they didn't put speakers on the thing or headphones, you couldn't hear what was going on, and audio is half of it, since basically it's just a interactive movie.
Well, ostensibly it's been in development for what, like 5 years or
well,
something?
Well, if you're including tech demo time. So you go up there, there's a tech demo, and basically it's just like a very dramatic scene, sort of as if you were on set but doing an audition, right? That's kind of what it was. So it's this woman in a chair or in a kitchen or something, and she's very dramatic and she's crying, and there's some sort of, you know, plot text there. But I don't know, because I couldn't hear the damn thing, because to hear it, you would literally put your ear up to the TV at E3 because there's so much other crap going on. Anyway, people were very impressed by it because it, you know, visuals and emotionally stimulating and all that jazz. So anyway, people talk about it enough and they decide to actually make a game out of it. But since what drove the popularity of this was the emotion stirred up by the script and the acting. You can guess that it's one of these games that is highly narrative, but very little in terms of gameplay, which is what we've been talking about the last few weeks.
Right.
Okay. Sure. So now it's finally becoming available. The demo's on PS3. It's only for PS3, and it's one of those games that Sony's going to talk about as groundbreaking, amazing, and only on Sony PlayStation 3, which is hilarious because they do that about games that aren't only on the PS3. And that's funny to me. So anyway, you play this game. The gameplay, it's hard to say that gameplay.
Okay.
It's so, interactive moments are done differently than other games that we might compare to, for instance, Dragon's Lair, or the little bits of God of War that.
They have some of that, but I hesitate to call it a game, not in any denigrating way, but only because, at least what we've seen of it so far, there's really almost no failure state.
Well, you know what? I didn't allow myself to die in the demo or to not succeed in the fight scene.
Right. I didn't explore that part of it, which we can get into later.
You didn't explore the fight scene or the possibility of losing the fight scene?
The possibility of losing the fight scene specifically, but almost... Actually, not even almost. Every single other event in the game, it was basically waiting for you to input the proper command, and it wouldn't
But one thing about this game is that there's this I don't want to call it a story arc, but a story tree, where you can... There's multiple characters you can control throughout the... And you will control throughout the game, at least according to the press that's been out about it so far.
Right.
And in the demo, certainly, you play as two different people, at least, and introduces sure. other characters. The idea is that it's not like a save-load situation where you're saving all the time and you can just change how you played. It's very much like you play through and whatever happens, happens. And so if you play as one character and you do poorly, and admittedly, there are few opportunities for you to... do well or poorly.
Right. In fact, it's not even... I don't even think that we should necessarily even use those terms to describe how things unfold, because...
Well, there are situations with A, B outcomes. Or potentially A, B, C, D, you know, multiple outcomes.
Well, on the face of it, yes. But it's not apparent that there are... that the actual outcomes are very... actually even different.
Well, we've been introduced to a very small portion of the game.
Right.
Thus far. But
and that brings me into some other things that I'll leave alone for the moment that we'll get into later.
Do you have a question about it now?
Is it not a game because you can't lose? Like, I don't understand. Like, well, a lot of games you can't lose.
I would say that based on what I've seen so far, I mean, that's the crux of it, but to be a little more specific, I wouldn't call it a game because it doesn't seem like your performance in executing whatever's called for actually matters.
So what about a game like Myst? So that's something I'm familiar with, right? Like these types of step walkthrough kind of games. Is that considered a game?
Myst was a long time ago, but did it have a failure state?
I don't think that it did.
Well, it doesn't in terms of game over, right?
But it does in terms of you don't know what to do next and you turn it off.
Well, you just get frustrated, yeah.
Right. I mean, there's... Once again, right, we have an incomplete picture of what Heavy Rain does, but based on what we've seen so far...
We do know about all of its interactivity, because the screen that tells you all the different controls...
Right. But I would say that...
We used all of them already.
Yeah. I would say that Myst is a little more like a game, although still kind of on
elements.
The edge. Because there's explicit puzzle elements in terms of you have to figure out... Right, what is going on? It's a non-trivial puzzle to figure out, and you can't progress until you do. Right, so you have to. You feel like you've accomplished something material. Yeah. In contrast, right, from what we've seen of Heavy Rain so far, there's like one part where you're investigating. You go into like a crime scene, right, and you walk around. You activate certain things. And you can leave, or you can stay and activate more things. But no matter what you do, you end up leaving, right? And the only difference is you see some things that you didn't see before. And the only real element of skill is, and I would hesitate to even call it that, is the part where, I don't know if you found it, Alon, but there's a hill
yeah.
that you can climb. And you have to hold certain buttons in concert in order to actually be able to climb up the hill. And I suppose if you were really bad at pressing buttons, you could not be able to successfully negotiate the hill. But it's so easy that for all practical purposes, it's just like...
So this is the part that actually interested me. So okay. What's weird is I was playing it and I thought to myself partially, yeah, this is totally just an interactive story. And I don't care that much about the story because I haven't been exposed to that much about it, and I don't care about this origami killer. But
so that's interesting in and of itself, right? Because how are you supposed to be motivated if you're trying to explore a space that is going to supply you the motivation?
Yeah, well, it didn't. But what I did like, simply as you know, a game player and someone who discusses games on the radio, right? It's not just like God of War where anytime you're actually interacting with the game, you're just pressing a button that goes on the screen. Like, oh, press X, now press circle, now press triangle. And you have to do it fast enough or you fail that
right.
particular
although,
sequence.
Although in that game, right, that was like pretty much relegated to boss moments.
Yeah. And regardless of what happened, like that was a specific mechanic and it worked a specific way. It was always press this certain button, do it now, do it quickly enough, and that's it. And so this game essentially has the same idea where you get to a point and you have to do something that's fairly trivial and but in this case could be repeated over and over in some instances. Like going up the hill, if you fail, you just try again. Of course, it's early in the game, so who knows? Later on, it might be more complicated. But
right.
It's literally just, you know, hold the circle button. And, you know, then he slowly gets his foot on a muddy part of the hill and he gets his footing. And then it shows you press the triangle button, which is, to be exact, a little bit to the left of the circle button, right? And so then he moves his left foot up on the hill. And then press the R1 button, which is above and to the right of the triangle button. And then he puts his right arm, which is a higher limb on the right of his left foot, up on the hill, right? So it's sort of comparable to his body.
They try to do mappings like that, but sometimes it just completely breaks down. I mean, I have to say
I mean, you just can't do it exactly, but yeah, they try.
Well, like I think there's good examples of moments that seemed cool, like that one, like, okay, it seems to be a mapping between like the cues and what the character's actually doing. On the other hand, the part where you're going through the alley and you had to squeeze yourself through like the dumpster and the wall.
Oh, the control is miserable when
you're
walking.
And I'm not even talking about that. There's a point where there's a pinch point where you have to hold down a bunch of buttons again, right, in order to actually squeeze your character.
Are you talking during Fat Guy or FGI mode?
During Fat Guy.
Okay. Fat Guy, no, it wasn't. I didn't feel squeezing. I was just walking through.
No, there's a specific point where you have to press this button combination for him to squeeze himself through this dumpster in the wall.
Then I did not play that part, and it's not necessary to do, so I missed something.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that when we get back, since the music's playing.
Okay. We'll be right back.
Arizona's News Talk Leader. KFNX, AM 1100.
All right, it's Chatterbox Video Game Radio, and we're talking about Heavy Rain.
And we're doing it very academically, as if you would if you were in a classroom. Just like a classroom at the University of Advanced Technology, UAT.edu for short. Head over there to learn about the programs they have to offer. All right, so getting back to the
okay,
gameplay.
Okay, so apparently you skipped this section that I didn't.
Or I'm just misunderstanding your intention.
No. It's really obvious, so I'm assuming that you just skipped it. Anyway, the point is there's just one part where you can go between a dumpster and a wall. And in order for you to do it, right, you have to – the game asks you to, like, hold down a bunch of buttons, right? But all that the actual character does is he actually just, you know, squeezes between the two objects and kind of shuffles between them.
You're pantomiming a shimmy motion.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so he's shimmying.
That was definitely a shimmy.
Yeah.
I hate that word, but okay. So that's an example of a really, really bad mapping of buttons to action, because I couldn't tell what he was doing back there until he was about halfway through. So this is one of the interesting problems with not just this game, but just like any kind of interactive story type of game. where...
Where they have to come up with some sort of mapping for all sorts
of not necessarily
movements.
That, but it's really... To look at it at an even higher level, it's really like, okay, here's an interactive story, right? And the developer says, I'm going to let you choose what to do in these things, right? And I'm imagining that there's like a group of things to the left of me. And then, but these things that happen, you have no choice about, right? And the difference between the left group and the right group, right? Stuff that you can have to make choices about and stuff that you're not allowed to make choices about is completely arbitrary. And a lot of what the player spends time doing in these types of games invariably is that they are trying to figure out what is in this space and what is in this other space. What do I have control over and what do I not have control over?
Isn't that part of the game, though? Like, isn't that what you're supposed to be doing?
Well, that's an interesting question because on the face of it, I would say, like, okay, yeah, that could be fairly construed as part of the game, right? But on the other hand, it seems to really interfere with your enjoyment of the storyline, right? For example, one manifestation of this is just in the boundaries of the area you're exploring. So let's go to that crime scene area.
When you're up by the highway.
Right.
And you can't walk into the traffic.
So you can't walk into the traffic.
It's like an invisible wall.
Yeah. There's invisible walls everywhere. And so here's
Although they do add they add a little... a movie-esque thing where, like, when you walk near it, you get splashed by water, and he gets pissed off that he's splashed by water
the
first time.
Yeah, once, and
which is sort of
funny.
Like sort of your education. Hey, don't go near the traffic.
Right. So here's
it's the electric collar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Basically. So here's the limited space that you're allowed to move in, right? And on some sides, it's bounded by things that are believable, like walls. Okay. Like nobody expects to go through or scale walls, right? Okay, no problem, right? But then on the other side, right, there's the one you mentioned, right? There's other parts where there's no visible barrier or cue at all. You just walk, and then after you've gone too far, the character just by itself, like, turns around, like, taking about a second to turn around, right? And then he actually takes, like, 3 or 4 or 5 steps in the opposite direction, completely out of your out of your control. So it's like some people won't care about this, but other players, especially ones who are used to exploring spaces in games, want to figure out, okay, what can I do here? What's the extent of my boundary? And it just seems like walking around in the crime scene, walking around the edges, trying to figure out where you can go and where you can't go, if there's a secret area or not, right, is just really, really counterproductive to what the intent of the game is. I'm sure that's not what the intent is.
I have a feeling this game will not have secrets.
For you to do. Yeah, probably not, right? But how do you know? Because I was surprised when I stumbled on that hill beyond the train tracks.
I wasn't really.
Okay, well, I was.
I felt led towards it. Well, did you find that, like, that mystical pollen trail in the air?
A little bit.
Because it led you there.
Right. A little bit of it, right? But...
there's like this long trail that if you find that, it leads you to the tracks and then leads you up to towards the hill.
Right. The interesting part was like initially when I got up to the tracks, I don't think I could cross them. Right. I think the train was moving by at that point. And then when I came close to the part where the pollen was kind of crossing the tracks, like, oh, okay, now I can cross.
Yeah. It's weird because people who are listening to us who haven't played it will have no idea what we're talking about.
Like me.
Yeah.
So, and let me ask this though. So how does this compare to another game where that's already defined for you? Because it seems like any 3D game like this has to have some kind of invisible boundary. And it seems like that's always been the case. Like, so Mario Brothers always had like that secret pipe on top of the blocks you had to just barely get up onto. Like, that was a part of the game. So you're saying that this game is supposed to be different. The experience is different.
Well,
you shouldn't have to be looking for that.
That's actually a really excellent question because in any kind of game, right? I mean, even if we expand it out to say any kind of like interactive product, right? There has to be some boundary on where you can go, for example, right? And the problem is that this is a problem that's kind of endemic to games that look very, very realistic because the more stylized the game looks, the more easily you can communicate the grammar of the boundaries of a play area, right? So like Pac-Man, okay.
There's a blue line. It's pretty clear. Don't cross the blue line.
You can't go across the blue line. Right. Okay, really simple rule, easy to understand, easy to apprehend. You see it right away. You spend what? 10 seconds if you've never seen a game in your life before figuring that, and now you know. But now now that we're in a scenario where everything looks just like real life and we're free to control the character, but we're bounded by an arbitrary set of boundaries, right? The developer has a choice to make. Like, one, like, do they bound everything by walls? You know,
or
that
mountains
has,
or rivers,
right,
or whatever.
And, you know, there's some dissatisfying element to that because, okay, I'm at a crime scene. I'm not in a canyon, right?
It's just a prettier blue wall.
Right. But then on the other hand, right, the only compromise left is one that's not satisfying in one way or another. And right. it's just an artifact of having to deal with a game that appears to be real.
Yeah. But yeah, exactly. You accept it. Once you the more realistic your game gets, the more you realize the game has limitations,
right,
and you can't jump like you do in real life. You can't decide that you're going to just stand there and pick your nose,
right,
all of a sudden.
But it's not, but there's an important element to this, which is that if they go the route that they went with Heavy Rain, right, invariably the choices that the developer made about how to bound the area are arbitrary. And so you will, if you're trying to explore where you can go, you have no choice but to kind of blindly walk in areas that you don't know are bounded or not, because they have not established a consistent grammar for bounding areas.
That the lack of consistent grammar or explanation of the game is what I wanted to talk about. So,
okay.
With all due respect, you've talked for a bit about it. I have a totally different angle I want to take just to discuss the game in general.
Sure.
So I was playing it and finding myself confused internally, because on one hand I thought, this is kind of interesting, and the gameplay in quotes elements that they added, simply because they were different than what I'd seen before, I was somewhat intrigued.
Okay.
Kind of like to just see, like, oh well, you've got a hold button, so instead of just tapping them real fast or tapping them quickly enough before the guy punches you or something.
And sure,
of course that would get old after you've used all the different types of control mechanisms. I would no longer be interested in learning a new one, because there wouldn't be new ones. So the demo kept me a little bit interested, because there was constantly something that I hadn't done in a game before, even if it was relatively menial. But I kind of see myself like, you know what, if I had the whole game, I'd kind of want to play it. I would want to learn a little bit about the story, and I'd be willing to play it through just because it's interesting enough. But on the same token, I think about it and I'm like, you know what, this is really, and Noah, this is really what it is. It's just a choose your own adventure, like with more technology. Where, mm-hmm. You know,
that's, you know what, I've thought about this a lot, and I've always come back to that. It's an elaborated choose your own.
Yeah, I mean, and it's going to be more emotional and more adult storyline with, like, blood and murder and stuff like that.
Sex.
And whatever.
Sure.
Yeah, there's some of that. There's a horror in this.
Nudity and the gore and all the M-rated things they can think of.
Yeah, exactly. So there's more adult elements and there's more technology, so it makes it more interesting. But at the same time, it's just choose your own adventure. So when I get to that hill, it could either be just press A to go up the hill. Like, there doesn't have to be any sort of challenge to it, and it's going to be just the same. And all of these interactive elements are very similar. It's like, do you want to successfully beat this guy up who's fighting you?
Right,
or
right.
Do you want to fail?
Right.
Now, in this case, it's a game normally isn't, do you want to succeed in this level or fail? and the fighting element
right.
gives you timing, and you right. can't just repeat it if you fail. So that's a little bit like a game. But it's just the Simon Says game, like God of War, where it's press X, now press triangle, now press square, do it quickly. What, unfortunately, about this game, I'm guessing, although I haven't tried it to be sure, it's going to be the same sequence every time.
Well, what you said before is the reason why it's not really game-like and more just...
What do you mean, because it's Choose Your Adventure?
Choose Your Adventure.
Yeah, so I'm going to cover this a little bit more for 1 minute when we get back, and we'll see if there's anything else we want to talk about. And there's a few other things unrelated to Heavy Rain I've got to talk about as well. We'll be right back.
It's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one. Woohoo!
And we're back talking about Heavy Rain. Now, Ara's got some stuff to cover, too. I want to get this out of my system, the stuff I wanted to mention.
Get it out of your system.
So, I'm playing this game, and I'm trying to decide, do I like it? Do I not like it? Is it something I would want to recommend to other people? Do I think it's Would I be ashamed of liking it if I do like it? Like, all of these questions are going through my head. And honestly, I like it enough, like, I'm intrigued by it enough to play it, partly because of the slight bits of control that are thrown into it. And of course, the story probably picks up and becomes a little bit more interesting. They don't reveal too much in the demo, but ultimately what it comes down to is that it's just a choose-your-own-adventure, but a little bit more advanced. And my concern is, so they throw in all of these elements. What I think happens is they make this storyline. They really want to have a story. They want to produce drama and put that onto a video game. What they could have done is just put it on a DVD, but, you know, that's not what they were doing. They wanted to make this game for the PS3 and promote PS3, whatever, you know, emotion engine, whatever they're calling it these days.
And graphics instead of live action.
Exactly. So what they do is they have to make it game-ish, and by doing so, they have all these different, the story tree. And what I perceive as a problem in Choose Your Own Adventures is that if you make the wrong decision, you can end the book in 10 pages when it's, you know, 150-page or 200- or 400-page book. You know, Choose Your Own Adventures aren't long, they're for kids. So you can end it very quickly. But in this one, let's say you're playing as character A and you make the wrong decisions and character A dies. Supposedly what it does is it moves you on to whatever other character for you to use. And then the storyline actually takes into account that that character is dead and continues with that information. Now, I'm sure it doesn't come up a lot. They probably scripted it in such a way where it doesn't matter if that guy is dead or alive for this particular story arc with character B to continue flawlessly. But supposedly, if he dies, you can still move on and see more of the game. And if he lives, it might be slightly different. You'll see more with that character. Maybe you'll get more clues to the mystery. And then maybe when you move on to the other character, character A still being alive could influence it a little bit. But I'm sure it's just subtly, because it'd be too hard to program to make it a very complex interaction.
Yeah, I have the impression that the game presses you forward
regardless
of what happens. And that's another reason why it feels to me less like a game. It will continue on to the end, and maybe some things will change, but it will always go to the end no matter what you do.
Yeah, certainly it's not going to take skill to see most of this game. It's just going to be exactly how you see it. And no matter what skill elements they put in there, they're minimal just by virtue of the gameplay mechanics. So what I was saying is I'm kind of intrigued by the various ways they implement gameplay. Like, in order to take something out of pocket, you have to, like, curve the right stick a certain quarter turn, or to pull it out of a different pocket or put something into your pocket, you do a different quarter turn or something like that. So it makes it a little more interesting. But what I don't like, you were talking about defined grammar in a game, meaning, like, there's a certain set of rules and a certain set of things you can do. And what I don't like about it is that I can't look at an environment and without moving, know that, okay, I'm going to walk over there and I'm going to do this. Like, meaning, like, I'm going to jump on that crate
and then
look down from above.
Exactly. And this is another example of this dichotomy I was explaining earlier. You have no idea how you can interact with objects in a room
until you get right next to them.
Right. Until you try interacting with everything, because the decisions that they made about what you're allowed to touch and move and not touch and not move are ultimately arbitrary. And it's not because of any kind of lack of skill or smartness on anybody's part. It's arbitrary by nature, because you can't infinitely program everything in a game, right?
Yeah. And really, this is programmed very, very little bit. Like, there's a big environment that's all fancy and pretty, but they want you to do very specific things. And if they didn't, you'd be searching there all day to make sure you don't miss something. So, I mean, I think they did the right job. Like, for their intention, they did what they needed to do,
well,
and they made it as interesting as they could make it.
Right. The point is that with this type of structure, you could look at it as you're screwed either way. Because if you give too much choice, right, then there are too many distractions that have nothing to do with the plot line. If you don't give any choice, then you're watching a movie, which, incidentally, hey, that's not all that bad.
Yeah. But honestly, like, let's say this turned into some sort of genre and they made a bunch of them. I don't think it'll happen because it's too demanding in terms of development time. But like, it's kind of interesting. If I'm the kind of person who really likes deep story, I would prefer an interactive story that could go multiple ways. That's just more interesting to me. But at the same time, you know, a purely cinematic experience is going to be more action-packed. I'm not going to be standing there in a field wondering what to do, having this 10-minute lull of, oh, wait, I missed that clue over there.
Right, right. Well, by necessity, this type of storytelling or game or whatever you want to call it, right, it's much, much slow paced. And the main impression I got after playing the demo was that, you know, this really is pretty much just like a movie that proceeds at my slow pace.
Yeah, whatever that pace is.
Yeah, and not at its own pace.
Exactly.
So, and
can you get a better feel for what this is now?
I do, and I'm watching a video here too. Thank God for iPhones. So help me with this, though. So in the past, I would say like a game developer would say make it so that you can. I guess if there's something that can be interacted with, it's going to shine or it's going
to
glow or something.
So
you have to go around
to
and touch everything, right? Is that not the case here?
I don't think they do it with every single thing.
Not everything.
Sometimes it's like proximity. You have to get close to it and it'll tell you.
To give you an example. So there's two main scenes that you could play in the demo. One, you're playing a private eye who's just a dude with a trench coat, right?
And I think that's what I'm watching.
Okay.
Too.
So that's very much just like normal. Nothing's glowing. You just go somewhere because, say, you're in an alley. You're on one end of the alley. Well, you're going to go to the other end of the alley. That's natural. And then you get to a point where you pretty much can only do one thing, like go into a door. And once you're in there, it talks to a dude for you, and that dude says, go up here, which was weird, by the way. He said go to the third floor. You only go up one flight of steps, and then you're at where you need to be.
I also you can skip him. You don't have to talk to him at all.
Really?
Yeah, I skipped him the second time.
That's weird. So the first time I'm not sure you can, because I could have sworn I went into the building and he automatically started talking to the dude. Anyway, not important. So in the next scene that you play, if you play it the story mode instead of just going from one to the next or choosing the one you play. So in the next one, you're an FBI guy, and there's a part where you put on these like funky, high-tech, totally unrealistic glasses and a special glove. And it's like got like some sort of special heat sensor vision, can read DNA just by looking at it sort of thing. So I don't want to criticize it because it's unreal, because it's cool, whatever, it's a story. But while you're wearing those glasses, certain things in the environment do glow. And you can see that they don't glow, but like there's this very Minority Report type thing. Yeah, exactly, like your iPhone shows. Very Minority Report hovering icon that you're basically beckoned to. But when you take those glasses off, that stuff disappears. So it's context relevant. You know, if you're wearing the glasses, then yes, you can see special stuff. And they explain that by the fact that you're super funky with this high-tech gear. Right. So, by the way, totally want one of those things.
Okay. So let's go back to the choose your own adventure thing, because I think that there are a lot more similarities with the just plain old choose your own adventure than meets the eye.
Sure. I'm not sure where you can go with it. Like, either it gives you a story and then you can choose a different route. Well, it's not as blatant. I'll give it that.
Well, here's a lot of the interesting things and also the problems with this game in specific and this type of structure.
You totally called it a game.
Of storytelling. Yeah. Is that, let's see what's the best way to put this? Okay. So, if we think of a game, right, as a collection of choices that you have to make, right? Somebody once said that they define a game as a series of interesting choices. Now, without giving...
Do you want me to stop you and disagree just let you go?
No.
Okay.
No. I'm not saying that's the only definition or it is the complete definition.
Well, that's just missing the idea of challenge as well.
Fine.
Okay.
But... you can't deny that a good game has interesting choices in it.
Maybe. I'm thinking of like Super Mario Brothers.
I know you just want to disagree, right?
No, I'm thinking specifically of one of the most popular games,
right.
Super Mario Brothers.
So
the original.
There's no interesting choices in Super Mario Brothers?
I mean, the choice is either move forward and get to the end of the level or not, or like break this block or not.
Well,
but no, the choice is very much move forward and it's more of a challenge than a choice.
Right, but
can you successfully do this?
But you can still frame it in terms of a choice, and it makes sense, right? Because you have to choose to do things with certain timing, with certain dexterity. These are, even though these are choices that are happening in a very small space of time, they're still a series of choices. I mean, it feels different. You're not choosing them from a menu, but they're still choices you make. So now, given that, right?
Okay.
Here's the problem with things like Heavy Rain, is that we know, or we assume, that when through the course of the game, your actions, the choices you make, will affect how the game plays out. What's not clear, in fact, especially from this demo, what's really confounding is that we have no idea at all when we make a choice what it's affecting. Is it going to affect something in the immediate future? Is it going to affect something 5 hours down the line? Not only when
we don't even know when we're making a choice.
Right. Well, exactly. It's not clear even if the choice we're making is an actual choice that will impact what happens. Anyway, I'm coming on to something big here. So the music's there again. So we'll take care of it when we come back.
All right.
Back for the final segment.
Is that what we call it?
Chatterbox Video Game Radio.
And to start off this wonderful segment, we're going to remind you about UAT.edu, the website for the University of Advancing Technology. They make the show happen. Without them, we wouldn't be here. So go take a look at their website. And if you're a kid who wants to go to school, you should consider going to school there. They don't totally suck.
Okay. So before we went on break, I was talking about this idea of the meaningfulness of choices that you make in games or interactive stories or Heavy Rain specifically, right? And so one of the interesting issues is that, just to recap real quickly, you have no idea the impact of choices you make. You have absolutely no information or insight into them. To me, what this means is that if you don't have any information or feedback immediately about the consequences of your choice, effectively, it's a non-choice. If you say you can choose A or B and you don't know what that means, what's the difference?
But does it always turn into something? Like, are you making a difference? You just don't know about it yet.
Well, we don't know if we are. That's
you may or may
about.
Not be making a difference. And if you do make a difference, then you don't know how much or of what kind.
But you've just played the demo, though, too, right? So our discussion so far is we played like a pre-release.
Right. But at the same time, right, there's something about the interactive story structure like games, in games like Heavy Rain, that kind of necessitates this kind of obfuscation for it to work in the first place, right? Because, for example, right, let's just say, purely hypothetically, right, I kill a character, okay? In a narrative, right, in a storyline where events happen one after the other, I think it's perfectly reasonable to assume that there's the consequences of me killing this character could impact me at any arbitrary moment later on, or could not impact me, right? Because sure. The storyline, right, like events have to occur and it takes time to develop, and because of that, I think more often than not, you can't get instantaneous feedback, you know? Like, there isn't some guy that says, like, oh, if you kill this character, then in 4 months down the storyline, you won't be able to do this, but you'll be able to do the other thing, right? Now, that doesn't really work, right? That kind of just destroys the idea of the story if that's that explicitly conveyed to you. But think about this type of structure now in terms of action games, okay? In action games, you get to make choices, and you find out the consequences of them almost immediately. I'm talking about choices like, let's say this is as simple as running into the Goomba or jumping on the Goomba's head, right?
Right.
This is a choice that you make, right? Or jumping over the Goomba, right? Now, the interesting thing about a traditional action game structure is that it allows you to not only be confronted with this choice repeatedly, maybe hundreds of times, right? But it gives you that confrontation of that same choice in a way that is, I guess you could say, harmonious with the structure and the continuity of the game, right? I get to see a Goomba once, I get to see a Goomba twice, I get to see 300 Goombas. It makes sense, right? You don't get to see and interview the prostitute 300 times in Heavy Rain. That makes no sense. The structure of the action game basically...
Wait, you just said it makes no sense that you can't interview her forever?
Right.
Why not?
In the narrative storyline, right? I mean, like, yeah, you could probably, like, restart and do it again, right? But I'm talking about in a continuous continuity of the game, right? You can't redo that scene over and over while the game's still progressing, right? You'd have to, like, stop and somehow go back or restart the game and try it again.
No, you're right. It's not an option, but that makes sense to me. It doesn't not make sense.
Right, but I'm saying it doesn't make sense in the structure of one continuous storyline or in action game terms, right? One playthrough of the game.
I'm very confused about what you're saying.
Like one, like from in level one in Super Mario Brothers, there's probably like 10 or 13 Goombas.
Yeah.
Right? You get to encounter them and explore the space of what happens when you do different things with them, and it doesn't disrupt the flow of one level. In the same way, right, you cannot interview the prostitute 13 times because in the flow of one story, because that doesn't make any sense.
Oh, it wouldn't make sense to interview.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
I thought you said it doesn't make sense that you can only see her once.
No.
Okay, so we're on the same playing
all
field.
Right. Okay. Good times. So the interesting thing is that in order for you to, right, to figure out what impact do my choices have on what's happening and what are the best choices and what are my trade-offs, and to understand and really analyze and figure out the system, because that's what it is, regardless of whether it's a narrative or a strict action game, right? There's a system of how things interact with each other that the player is exploring. And in an action game, they're given enough opportunities repeatedly to actually gain knowledge in a way that they can actually learn and use and benefit from those experiences. But in the story, right, in the interactive story of Heavy Rain, you get to make one choice and then live with it. And then if you want to do it again or try it again, right, you basically have to effectively, quote, rewind or just start over from the beginning.
Yeah. And you're right. Like, there's no set of rules that's put forth that you just know you'll be able to do this in this environment. So it's very ungame-like in that way.
Right.
And that frustrates me.
It frustrates me, too. And ultimately, what it turns out to be is I feel like I'm subject to having to make all kinds of choices, but because I don't know what they mean, right, because the structure doesn't allow me to really figure them out without disrupting the continuity of the product, they're almost like non-choices or false choices.
So the thing is, when I think about this as a game traditionally, then I'm disappointed because I have certain expectations. But you know how, especially with the PlayStation 3, you go into the PSN store and there's all these things that they call interactive art that you can buy or download, right?
Yeah.
Pay to download. If I were to classify this as just an interactive art project, like those other things you see in the PSN, then it makes more sense to me. If I don't think about it as a game, then it's cool. It does a pretty good job.
It all depends on your expectations.
If I say it's a game, then I say it's not following the normal rules, which are give me a set of instructions, give me a set of expectations, let me learn those and reuse them later so that I can, you know, be better. But in this case, really, it's just interactive story. And although it's frustrating that I don't know what's going to happen, that's sort of the point of a narrative. You don't know what's going to happen until you get there.
Well, a little bit, right? But then I find myself having to ask the question without an answer that if the storyline's going to go on no matter what I do and I don't know the consequences of my actions, then why do I have to have the burden of making that choice in the first place? And that's like, why can't I just watch this, right? Mm-hmm. And if variations are interesting, why can't I just watch alternate scenes, you know? And what am I actually materially getting out of this experience where choice means something? Why can't I just see it? Why is this not...
So why does it have to be interactive at all?
Well, that's really my question. Like, ultimately...
Well, because it's building a different story, supposedly, with its story tree.
Well, right. But ultimately, right, it's kind of like, okay, here's a small microcosmic example that you can expand and apply to the whole game. The scene where you knock on the prostitute's door.
Yes.
Right. So you go up to, you know, this hotel room door and you knock on it.
Did you kick in the door, or did you do whatever the other option was?
I did both.
Because you tried it again?
Yes, I did both. So there's two things you can do. Because when she first answers the door, she only cracks it open. You can see half her face. And she says something, and then she closes it. And for a split second, there's a cue that says, oh, if you press up, you can smash the door in on her, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I was talking about a different part where you can either kick it or do something else.
But oh, okay. So anyway.
Same idea.
So at first, you're like, that's really, really cool, right? Because you can see that, oh, I wonder what happened. How is she going to react if I push the door in her face, you know? And how is she going to react if I don't and just let the door close, you know, right? Well, what happened is whether you choose to push the door in her face or wait until she closes it and knock on it again.
You're still going to get in, right?
The outcome, not only are you still going to get in, but the outcome in terms of her behavior is precisely the same.
Mm,
yeah. And like that's the thing. Like, playing it and thinking about how these things are made, I knew that that was the case. I knew that whether or not later, what I was talking about is after you have the asthma attack and then the guy goes in there and then you
go
in there after
him,
you can either kick in the door or do whatever the other thing does. I did the kick in thing. I knew that either way, I'm going to get in there and I'm going to fight the guy. So it's irrelevant, and which is the part I was talking about. Like, it's just sort of wasting my time to get to the story because they had to throw in interactive elements.
Right, right.
They said, I have a story and I need to make it interactive, so let's squeeze in these
bits. Well, that's the thing. When you park your car, what am I gaining? What am I getting out of the game making me turn the handle
to get
out and put the car in park? Because there's nothing materially significant about that.
But what it's trying to do, it's trying to bring me in. It's, you know how they say be the game or be in the game environment or whatever? It's
But when you figure out that it's tantamount to just saying, okay, I want to see the next thing, then what?
Well,
like, are we
when you're thinking about it like a game designer like us.
Yeah.
Ultimately, you're asking if I liked it or didn't like it.
Is this a thumbs up game or a thumbs down? I still don't know.
That's not what we do. I think if you're the type of person who wants a story, it might... It's worth checking out. That's all. Anyway, we're at the end of the show. Thank you for listening, everyone, everybody. We'll be back next week.
Good night, guys.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info and the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.